Marcus Sahaba Online Radio, serving you wherever you are.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Ahlan wa sahlan wa marhaban bikum. And welcome to Medical Matters with myself, Brother Sulaiman Isup, every Wednesday evenings between 8 and 9 p.m. Today being the 22nd of Jumad al-Ula 1447, corresponding to Wednesday the 12th of November 2025. A beautiful evening here in Johannesburg, and part two of the heart and the functions of the heart. And we'd like to welcome our beloved Dr. Amin Melrose. Doctor, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam. Good to be here. Good to be on the program again.
Amin. Jazakallah khairan. Doc, continuing and just doing a recap on our program that we discussed last week. We were discussing the heart and its functions. Now, Doc, can you just give us a quick recap of what we had discussed last week?
Yes, certainly. We have been, as you said, busy last week on the heart. We've looked at the heart attack. We've looked at some vital signs. We've looked at the heart rate. We've looked at blood pressure, veins, arteries, and among other details, heart transplant. So we've done quite a bit on the heart, and we should be able to get through it today, hopefully, as the time allows us.
Inshallah, Amin. Inshallah, we should have enough time to cover the part two of our program. Doc, I've heard of angina, but never quite understood what was the term. Can you please explain to us and the listeners what is angina and how is it caused?
Well, angina, of course, is detected when a patient complains of discomfort in the chest, which is brought on by physical or emotional.
Doc, our next question that comes in, it says, how is it, or how do patients describe the pain that they go through when they have an angina attack?
Well, they describe it, angina, as a feeling of tightness or pressure or heaviness in the chest. Now, while many people live with this condition for years, angina is actually a sign of a predisposition, a warning, in fact, of a pending heart attack. About 25% of men and about 12% of women who develop angina experience a heart attack within 5 years after that. So this is a very serious situation. When they get an angina attack, they need to go and sort it out with their doctor, because as we said, 25% of men and 12% of women who develop angina actually experience a vital heart attack within 5 years after that. That is the problem.
Doctor, how is angina treated?
Well, the classic long-standing treatment for angina is a drug which is known as nitroglycerine. At the first hint of an attack, the patient slips a nitroglycerine tablet under his or her tongue, and this usually relieves the pain within a matter of minutes, in fact, by dilating the coronary arteries. Now, some patients carry the nitroglycerine around with them, and they habitually take the nitroglycerine before exerting themselves in any way. For example, climbing a very taxing flight of stairs. So before they do that, they take a nitroglycerine tablet. Another drug which has become available is the so-called beta blocker. I'm going to spell that. I won't spell the beta blocker. I'm going to spell what it actually is, and that is a propranolol, P-R-O-P-R-A-N-O-L-O-L, propranolol. That is the alternative drug to take. Now, it reduces the heart muscle's actual need for oxygen by slowing down the heart rate. That's what this item does. It slows down the heart rate. And these two drugs, and also calcium channel blockers, all work together by helping to increase the supply of blood to the heart, in fact.
Doc, I recently heard that someone was using, or surgeons are now using, a balloon method to assist in a heart bypass or operations. It sounds really weird that I haven't heard of something of this sort. Is there something really serious when they use a balloon method, Doc?
Yes, it sounds like they're having a party, doesn't it? No, it's very possible, and of course it's true, and it's increasing in popularity. It's called balloon angioplasty. It has another name, which I'll mention in a minute. This is the technical name. Its other name, excuse me, is percutaneous transluminal angioplasty. Wow, that's quite a mouthful. But that's abbreviated, and doctors know that when they talk about PTA, then they're talking about this using of the balloon. Now, it was introduced in around about the late 1970s, and it offers an alternative to coronary artery bypass surgery for patients who have blockages in only one or two branches of the coronary anterior.
Doc, can you please explain to our listeners and myself as how can you please describe how is the balloon method or the balloon bypass operation? How is it done?
Well, yes, it's quite a serious operation. The surgeon inserts a catheterized catheter fitted with a tiny uninflated balloon. All right, I'm going to repeat that, what I've just said. The surgeon inserts a catheter filled with tiny uninflated balloon on its tip, a tiny little balloon. He inserts this into an artery in the patient's arm or leg. And this catheter is then threaded through the artery into the aorta and from there into the patient's diseased coronary artery. Now, once it is in place, the balloon is then inflated, and this compresses the fatty deposits and opens the artery so that blood flow is improved. Now, the balloon is then deflated and removed, and this procedure is less risky than bypass surgery, and the patient spends less time in hospital. Successful dilation without recurrence of the blockage is what they are going for.
No, Jazakallah khairan for that, Doc. You know, it's really interesting to hear and understand how such types of operations are being done. Doc, now what is a valve replacement?
Right, now valve replacement, excuse me, is, in fact, as it is called, it's a replacement of a heart valve that does not close properly. Obviously, dangerous for the patient, because if the valve doesn't close properly, a heart valve does not close when it does not close properly, or it has a backwash, a leakage, or a blockage, then it leads to an enlargement of the affected heart chambers. It also reduces the effectiveness of the heart muscle. So now, how is this performed, the heart valve replacement? The valve can be repaired by inserting a ring into it, or the valve can be completely replaced. And in this instance, in the same way as cardiac bypass patients, except that they do not need to have incisions in the arms and legs. Now, tight white stockings for purpose of preventing embolism are worn on both legs for 6 weeks. What is embolism? Well, embolism occurs when an artery is blocked by a block clot, which could, in fact, otherwise result in a stroke or even gangrene.
Okay. Doc, another question that came in with regards to the pacemaker. Can Doc please explain what is a pacemaker?
Yes, well, an alarm is attached to the heart monitor. A pacemaker, in fact, keeps the beat of the heart. So where your heart is not beating properly, the pacemaker actually takes over that function and keeps the heart beating, keeps the person alive. And it's not a tremendously difficult operation. And the person comes out of hospital, having had a problem going into hospital, comes out of the hospital with the pacemaker, and the heart is beating normally, and they can then live a really close to a normal life.
Now, Doc, is a pacemaker and a heart monitor one in the same thing?
No, not at all. Now, a pacemaker is attached to the person, and a monitor is the machine that is next to the patient in the hospital. Let me just describe that for a little bit. An alarm is attached to the heart monitor, which is a machine next to the patient that's brought in by the sister or by the nurse. So an alarm is actually attached to a heart monitor. Now, you know what an alarm is? It's something that warns you that something's going wrong. But in this case, it can be activated by the slightest movement or vibration. Now, an alarm does not necessarily mean that something has gone wrong. The alarm notifies, lets the bedside nurse know that she must now ensure that all is well, everything's going well, the patient is fine, the machine is working, and she might also need to recalibrate it at some stage or other. So that's what the alarm is about. There's nothing like an alarm that you'd have in the house when a burglar breaks in. It's an alarm that's attached to the heart monitor, and it's there just to make sure that the nurse, I dare not say this, doesn't fall asleep, that the nurse is attentive, in other words, and keeps watching it to make sure. Then, in fact, the monitor is working and the patient is okay. Even when the patient moves slightly, the alarm goes off. So it really, it also helps the nurse to know, look, I must have a look at the machine. I must recalibrate the monitor. So that's what it's all about.
Now, Doc, when it comes to the recovery, right, in Islam, we firmly believe that Almighty Allah is the one who grants shifa and grants recovery to a sick person. society, according to society, is widely known that visitors play a pivotal or important role in the recovery of a patient. Can Doc please elaborate on this?
Yes, certainly. Obviously, I think just off the cuff, any patient that's in hospital is just absolutely longing for people to visit them, aren't they? You know, because they get so lonely there and they're cut off from their family. But the patient's visitors definitely play an important role in the patient's recovery. But there are certain important guidelines that must be followed, you know, for the patient's sake and for the visitor's sake. And I'm going to give you a few of these, and about four or five of them, I think. As important as the role of the visitors, the patient does need to rest. So in other words, they mustn't do anything to upset the patient. The patient needs to rest. That's a basic thing. So the visitors come in there to cheer the patient up, to show their love and their support. But they must remember that the patient does need to rest. And that's obviously why the hospital set certain times. You can come in at 7 o'clock, but you've got to be out by 8. That's the first point. Family or the visitors need to know that the patient needs to rest. Secondly, after the surgery, the hospital team that has taken part in the surgery, they'll call for the patient's nominated next of kin or spokesperson or a member of the family to discuss the operation and to introduce the visitors, the family, to the nursing practitioner. They get introduced to the nursing practitioner who is in charge of the patient's care. All right, that's the second point. The third point is while they are in the cardiac ICU, the intensive care unit, only two immediate family members will be allowed to visit. Okay, that's the third point. And the fourth point is that children under the age of 12 are not allowed in the CICU, that is the cardiac intensive care unit, because of the possibility of infection to the child or the patient. So outside of those four points, the patients definitely play a vital role. They cheer the patient up. They make the patient feel at home. They're still loved, and they won't be too long, and they'll be back with their family. So that's what it's all about.
Doc, can you please explain to us the definition of heart arrhythmia for our listeners?
Certainly. Yeah, this is going to be quite a lengthy explanation, but I think it's important. Now, just as a background, day in and day out, night in and night out, year in and year out, just think about this. Your heart has the endless task of pumping blood through the 62,000 miles of arteries, veins, and capillaries in your body. Just think of that. From the time that you're in your mother's womb until the time that you're called up higher, your heart is pumping nonstop all the time. It does approximately 70 beats per minute, 4,200 beats per hour, 100,800 beats a day. Now, just multiply that by the number of years that the person lives. Now, these beats, as I said earlier on, started in your mother's womb, and they've never ceased in all the years of your life, and we never give it a thought until we have a fright when the beat changes. Now, if your lub-dub of your heart becomes lub-lub-a-dub, then there's going to be a problem. It's going to attract attention, either yours or the doctor's attention. Such irregular heartbeats, which are called arrhythmia. Irregular heartbeats are called arrhythmia. They occur when nerves that regulate the contraction of the heart go haywire. Normally, a heartbeat is a highly coordinated event, regulating the sequence that signals each chamber of the heart to contract and relax, pumping the blood through the body, via the lungs, of course, to pick up oxygen. Now, when all is going well, the atrial chambers and the ventricular chamber of the heart, they work in sequence. That's why you get that sound, lub-dub, lub-dub, pumping the blood to the lungs and the rest of the body. Now, when things start going wrong, the nerve signals may be delayed, or the nerves may fire more often than necessary. The chambers may not pump in proper sequence, and the end result is that the heart pumps less efficiently, rather like a car's engine, when the timing of the engine cylinders need adjustment in order to work in sequence. Here's a question. What causes the heart to go out of sync? And my answer there would be, in serious cases, disease of the coronary heart arteries, or the heart muscle is the most likely, according to doctors, the most likely cause, the heart muscle. Now, a medical researcher, I can mention his name, Dr. Brodsky, says in some cases, and often in conjunction with heart disease, mineral imbalance, and we're going to talk about that as well, mineral imbalance interferes with the heart's normal nerve function. So there we have it.
Jazakallah khairan for that, Doc. Doc, our next question comes in. It says, Doctor, you mentioned a mineral and a nutritional imbalance. Can you give us some insight into what specific minerals would be of benefit and value in the case of a heart arrhythmia?
Right.
Apologies, arrhythmia.
Arrhythmia, yes. Quite a difficult word. We don't use it very often. Now, when we're talking about nutritional therapy, we're talking about the food that goes into the body. And I stick by my formula, which says you are what you eat. Besides what you've inherited, you are, you become what you eat. So nutritional therapy for arrhythmia focuses on two minerals in particular, namely magnesium and potassium. And I'm going to tell you, during the course of our discussion, I'm going to tell you where one can get magnesium and potassium other than having to rely on tablets, right? Now, talking about the arrhythmia, nerve cells make use of both of these minerals to help to fire off messages. And a shortage of either one can cause life-threatening problems. Let me repeat that. A shortage of magnesium or potassium can cause life-threatening problems to an individual. Now, doctors have known for some time just how vital potassium is for normal heartbeat. Magnesium is entirely different story. Right? Let me just go back on that one in case we've gone on too quickly on it. Doctors have known for some time how vital potassium is for a normal heartbeat. That's important, and I think our listeners should really, really remember that. It's a very important mineral, potassium. Now, magnesium is slightly different. In fact, it's entirely different, as this is not as well known. Any patient referred to a doctor for a possible irregular heartbeat could or should be checked to determine his or her potassium and magnesium levels in their blood. Very important. Now, potassium, so that's very important. Any patient going to a doctor with a problem with their heart or the heartbeat, they need to have and make sure that the levels of potassium, magnesium levels in their blood is measured and taken in control if it's not in the right situation. Right now, several specific studies have shown that when it comes to certain types of heart arrhythmia, magnesium can save lives. Now, one study by a doctor, his name is Dr. Suter, and he's actually in America, the University of North Carolina. He found that the risk of developing potentially fatal ventricular arrhythmia was reduced by more than 50% in patients with heart failure who received large intravenous doses of magnesium. In other words, people were having a heart failure and they were injected with magnesium, and 50% of them received the large intravenous dose of magnesium compared to patients who did not receive the mineral, and they responded amazingly. Now, still on the magnesium, the mineral magnesium, that's the mineral we spoke about, potassium and magnesium, research studies have shown that 65% of all patients in an ICU, intensive care unit, and 11% of patients in general care, a normal ward, in those hospital wards, they are deficient. Let me just repeat that. 65% of all patients in ICU and 11% of patients in general care are deficient in magnesium. And the researchers say that this phenomena is more common than, in fact, most people realize. So, yeah, what do you think next question?
Gee, sorry about that, Doc. Our next question would be, you mentioned also about potassium as well. How common is a lack of potassium in our diets?
Right, that's a very interesting question, and I hope our listeners are making notes, yeah? There is no doubt that potassium is just as important as magnesium for a regular heartbeat. Remember, we spoke about heartbeat a little bit earlier on. If the heartbeat goes out of sync, then you need to get to your doctor. You need to get the magnesium and the potassium registered and looked at. So there's no doubt that potassium is just as important as magnesium to have a regular heartbeat. Now, in heart patients, low potassium levels are likely to be recognized and quickly corrected intravenously. Now, among the classic signs of potassium deficiency are heartbeat irregularities, along with muscle weakness and confusion. I'm going to mention that again. Among the classic signs of potassium deficiency are your heartbeat irregularities, along with muscle weakness, and also the patient gets confused. Now, fortunately, unlike magnesium, potassium levels are carefully regulated in our kidneys. So our kidneys do the job. And our bodies normally store and conserve potassium. Our bodies know how important potassium is. So when we are eating fruit and vegetables, which I'm going to mention later on, then our bodies, if they're not using their potassium, they store it, just in case in the future there's going to be a slight shortage in the nutrition that's coming into that person's body. Now, people who have normal kidney functions and healthy hearts, they have adequate blood levels of potassium. So don't get worried about this. I'm going to repeat that again. People who have normal kidney function and healthy hearts, they have adequate blood levels of potassium, even if they eat only a serving or two of fruit and vegetables per day. We'll discuss that a little bit later.
Doc, we come to our final question for the evening. How do we prevent potential problems of heart arrhythmia with our normal everyday diets?
Right. Might be the last question, but I'll take a bit of time on this one. How do we prevent potential problems of heart arrhythmia with our normal everyday diets? Right. Mineral balance plays an important role. And we mentioned potassium and magnesium. They play an important role in regulating our heartbeat. Now, let's look at our daily diet of do's and don'ts, and also at food supplements to cover any possible deficiencies in our diets, right? Let's have a look at some of the do's. Fish. A study with laboratory animals has shown that a diet that is high in fish and fish oil, and here I'm going to bring in what I've mentioned quite a few times, and I'll continue to mention it as we go along with our show from week to week, is omega-3. Patients, my listeners, omega-3 is a fish oil that comes from the northern cold waters fish, and it is something that keeps the fat deposits out of the arteries, out of the lungs. And it is absolutely something that one will get if one is eating fish. Let's say three meals of fish per week would be a good idea. So omega-3 is an essential fatty acid, as is fish oil. And it reduces the likelihood of fatal heart arrhythmia. Something else that can be taken, of course, is flaxseed oil. And instead of sprinkling what we normally do, the oil onto our salads, take flaxseed oil instead and sprinkle that on your salads, because flaxseed oil is also an essential fatty acid as a fish oil. Now, doctors suggest that you replace any saturated fat in your diet. And ladies, when you go shopping, make sure you look at the labels and make sure that there is no saturated fat in what you are purchasing. Doctors suggest that you replace any saturated fat in your diet with fish oil. Now, let's substitute fish, salmon, mackerel, sardines, tuna. Let's substitute them more often than we eat beef or dairy products. All right. I would suggest beef maybe once in 2 weeks. Unfortunately, as South Africans, we inclined to eat it more often than that, but it contains a lot of fat. All right. So this transubstantiate, you'd fish a bit more, and also skinless chicken. So we try and get less and less beef and less dairy products. Right. So that's the first thing. Speaking about fish and the oil of fish. Secondly, we must try to stick to herbal drinks, herbal brews and drinks, rather than brews that contain caffeine. All right. So what I'm saying very quietly there is try and take less coffee, less caffeine. Thirdly, absolutely, and I know that probably 99% of my listeners do this, avoid alcohol and minerals that contain a high sugar content. That's our third point. All right, so firstly, fish and fish oil. Secondly, avoiding caffeine. Thirdly, avoiding minerals containing high sugar content. And of course, alcohol. And then fourthly, how much magnesium and potassium do we need to take? If we're going to buy a food supplement, then magnesium, we would need 400 milligrams per day if we're going to be taking a supplement. And for potassium, we need 3,500 milligrams per day. You'll get that in a capsule, which you can buy from your health shop. And then I would recommend also, just to cover all the bases, multivitamin mineral, right? Multivitamin mineral tablet, one per day. And then just to close off our talk for today, seeing we're on the last question, as far as food is concerned, not everybody can afford to go out buying these food supplements all the time. So your normal diet should, if you want to cover the magnesium, brown rice, avocado pears, spinach. I hope my listeners are writing this down. Brown rice, avocados, spinach, baked potatoes, broccoli, yogurt, bananas, oatmeal, and of course, haddock, which is also a fish. And then the potassium, dried apricots, and then again, bananas. If somebody says to me potassium, I'll say to them banana, because that's the most common one. Dried apricots, bananas, spinach, cantaloupe, prunes, and baked potatoes. So we have in magnesium and potassium, we have quite a lot of duplicity there. All right, can I just go through them very, very quickly and then we're done. Food-wise, magnesium, brown rice, avocados, spinach, baked potatoes, broccoli, yogurt, bananas, oatmeal, haddock. And then finally, potassium, dried apricots, bananas, spinach, cantaloupe, prunes, and baked potatoes. And we're done.
Ameen. Jazakallah khairan, Doc, for your time and also discussing on the part two. This was part two of The Heart, and inshallah we will keep in touch and touch base during the course of this week, and we will be discussing there was another topic I think that doctor did mention that we'd like to touch on for next week, inshallah.
Would you like me to mention it?
Yes, Doc. We give our listeners a sneak preview so they can be aware.
A sneak preview or a foretaste of glory divine.
Yeah.
We're going to be talking about macular degeneration. That is protecting my vision into the later years. That's what we're going to be talking about. Protecting my vision into the later years. Right.
Jazakallah khairan, Doc. Allah reward you. And we shall catch up soon, inshallah. Jazakallah khairan once again for your time.
Alhamdulillah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And we'll see you again next week.
Inshallah. And there you have it, my respected listeners of Markaz Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah. That was Dr. Amin Melrose, and we are discussing and we completed the heart and its role and how it helps us and how to protect our heart. And next week, inshallah, as you heard, we're going to be discussing ways to protect our vision for the future years. Ways to protect our vision for the future years. From the team of Markaz Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, and the team of the medical matters with myself, Brother Sulaiman Isuf, every Wednesday evenings between 8 and 9 p.m. Bi amanillah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.